Does my tea come out of the microphone?
Does your tea come on?
When I sip the tea, does it turn into like...
It all depends on how you sip the tea. We're recording now, which is always a great thing. Because I like when we just roll in off of the, you know, hey, we're live, and all of a sudden you're asking a very obscure question. Like, does my tea come out, you know? I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode. What episode are we on with?
We are on magic number 15.
Episode 15 of the Zebra Stripes podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour of Bridgeton Academy. Coach, how are you?
I'm tired, frankly. I feel like, had a busy but yet great start to the NCAA tournament that involves some long, hard days of watching. So, I've been putting in my work at work, but you know, I'm not gonna lie. Wow, I need to get rested up for Thursday.
Yeah, it was a fantastic. I don't think the NCAA could have asked for anything better. Over those first 4 days of the tournament, even if you include the first four, and you include those matchups in there, I think over the first few days of the tournament, we had some really good games, some really intriguing outcomes that set up some absolute bangers of games for this week. So you're going to have to excuse us ahead of time. It's going to be a lot of tournament talk today. So if you don't want to talk tournament, then you probably tuned in to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, wait for number 16. That bounds to be that. I'm sure 16 is going to be good too. But 15, it's about death, taxes, and the NCAA tournament. All three that deliver every time.
Absolutely. And one of the things that delivered Shaheem Holloway and St. Peter's, marching their way through to the. To the Sweet 16, improbable, not just because they're a 15 seed, but improbable because they went through a couple of teams who put the ball in the cup, and they are not known as a team that puts the ball in the cup, and yet they were able to make the University of Kentucky and all of their five-star one-and-doners and Murray State, who has, I believe, a top five scoring offense in the country, they reduced both of those teams to squads that looked like they didn't have an identity. And the entire time, you know, Coach Holloway and his boys, and there's just something about New York guards, New York, New Jersey guards, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, they just know how to show up big, man. They know how to show up big. They know their way around the rim. They're not afraid of anything. And if you've got some of those tough, hard-nosed New York, New Jersey guards who have been, you know, underestimated because they don't get the national shine like some of these other, you know, guys who come from these, you know, these stat programs get, whatever it is, that makes these guys play so tough, play so hard. They understand the game at such a high level. Whatever it is, you know, salute to them and salute to Coach Holloway and what he's been able to get those guys to do, because they weren't they weren't the best team in the MAC.
No, so right there, what he got them to do was believe, right? And to your point, and I don't know Shaheen personally, but I know the story a little bit. He was the New York tough guard, you know, and his team played with fearlessly, right, through every tight situation so far they've been in. And so that's a It's interesting if you, you know, for a team that not Iona out of the MAC to advance to the Sweet 16. I mean, definitely improbable. Credit, like you say, to all of them. And I like what you said before we went on air about, you know, the fact that so far in this tournament, he's been able to play the games on his terms. And I think that's really, you know, that's a key fact and certainly one that's important as they get ready for Purdue. Will they, can they play the game on their terms again? And what does that mean?
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting is can they hold up? Can they hold up against you know, some guys with length that are kind of that same type of, you know, blue collar, you know, players. Purdue doesn't necessarily have a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans running around there. And they're used to playing tough basketball. They're used to playing against grinded out teams like Wisconsin and, you know, to a certain extent, Michigan State this year was more of a grounded out team because they really lacked the horses that they would normally have. I think when you look at teams like Northeastern and, you know, St. John's, you know, a lot of those, I'm sorry, not St. John's, Rutgers.
And Northwestern, if we're trying to.
Northwestern, sorry. I said Northeastern.
I like Northeastern and Bill Cohen if he's listening, but Northwestern is really.
Yes, Northwestern. My apologies, Wildcats. I did not mean to call you Northeastern. But you know, they're used to playing against those tough, gritty, you know, grind out a 64-61 type of game, a 59-61 game. You know, they won't be intimidated by that. But I think when we come back to it, like we said last year, the NCAA tournament, it's a guards tournament. And I think that if St. Peter's can get Purdue, if they can play, if St. Peter's can manage to play their game versus Purdue, they have a good opportunity to go to the Elite Eight.
And the reason I think they do have that chance, and again, I thought you know, what you made me think of it right away when you brought it up was, in fact, because, you know, again, they're this courageous, you know, gritty guard-based team, whatever. But Purdue is a little un-Purdue-like this year. So they're not based around their defense. Their KenPom rating is one of the lowest in the field, maybe the lowest, et cetera, which means that really they're not dictating the game in the usual blood and guts Purdue manner, you know, or at least it's a little different. So I'm, you know, you've heard me, I'm a Purdue guy, but I'm also an underdog guy. So I'm kind of excited about this game to see which one wins out. You know, the Boilermakers looking for their first NCAA title or at least, you know, advanced to have an opportunity to get that. And then, you know, okay, the St. Peter story, which is kind of George Mason-like, right? Is there, because that's the other thing that you made me think of when you're talking about playing the game on their terms. You know, that's exactly what Larrañaga got to George Mason to do, you know, 2005.
Hey, put the little squiggly line over the N. It's Larrañaga. Ever since he got to Miami, it's Larrañaga now. So make sure you put the little squiggly line on the end. He became Cuban really quickly the moment he took that job in Miami.
He seemed, the way he was dancing after that victory the other day, he looks like he was doing some salsa dancing too.
Well, it's interesting to even bring it up because Miami, they end up in the Sweet 16. Not improbable, but unlikely, as a 10 seed. Iowa Yep. State ends up in the Sweet 16 as an 11. And because both of those teams are now playing each other, we are guaranteed to get a double-digit seed into the Elite Eight. We kind of talked about it before, but I want to go a little deeper since this represents the game where we're definitely going to get a double-digit seed into the Elite Eight. who has a chance to go further, Iowa State or Miami?
Well, I think Miami does, and convincingly, actually. But that's a little bit because I know I've seen Miami a little bit more, a little bit more familiar with their style. I think they're an older team from what I know. You know, obviously, what TJ's done with Iowa State's remarkable. They were picked, you know, close to the bottom of the Big 12. So I say Larrañaga with the squiggly over the end. You know, he not his first rodeo either. So I give a fairly significant advantage to Miami. And in fact, the way they're playing, you know, I think Miami's the you know, the upscale version of St. Peter's. Like they're the St. Peter's with an actual chance to win the damn thing. Playing their five out guard based modern offense, having fun, playing with joy, you know, yada yada, not overcoached in the classic overcoached, you know, sense, you know. So you know, players are out there just playing aggressively as hell.
So I think in this matchup for me, I think both teams have been blessed. Both teams got some luck on their side. Number one, Iowa State got a chance to play, you know, LSU in the first round. And LSU that just, you know, ixnayed their head coach, a guy who was supposed to be the new hotness, and playing the game at a pace that was more sexy. They got rid of him right before the tournament begins. That's going to be difficult for any team to just rally and get it done when they don't know what their future holds or what their identity is supposed to be now. And they struggled with identity all season. So I think that was a great first-round matchup. But then, you know, Iowa State got to take on Wisconsin with – Wisconsin just had some bad juju on them. You know, it just was – I don't think it was going to be a Wisconsin-like tournament run. You saw it in the first round where they struggled, and – they struggled that don't put any points on the board. You know, if it's a situation where you can't put 50 points on the board, you don't deserve to go to the Sweet 16 anyway. Miami got similar luck. They ran into probably a USC team that wasn't quite ready. They were probably more veteran then. And then they got Auburn, where they were able to get the big man in trouble. He got two fouls right out the gate. That changed the entire dynamic of the game. Auburn didn't really know how to comport themselves without him for a long period of time. And before they knew it, the snowball had happened. And it was almost like it was too late for them to get out of their, you know, get out of their own way.
And Auburn had struggled late in the year, too. I mean, they were having, you know, their own identity issues seemingly late in the year. So,
yep, that first round game felt like they had it under control though, you know. And yep, then you run into Miami, and they made them pay. I'm inclined to agree with you. I wish this game wasn't scheduled where it's scheduled at. It's a 9:59 tip, which is super late. But it's also 20 minutes after the North Carolina UCLA matchup starts. So nobody's going to be watching that game unless somehow North Carolina decides they want to blow out another team early on in the first half. And then maybe people tune into it. But I think that the North Carolina UCLA is the only true blue blood game that we have in the tournament left. I think it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, that North Carolina UCLA game yields some type of legendary, you know, game. It's a really good matchup, and I'm interested to see how it unfolds. North Carolina has played really well did some real questionable stuff down the backstretch. I don't even want to talk about it. Between the referees and their decision making, felt like they tried to get a game away, but they were able to survive, and now they're on to the Sweet 16. What do you think about that UCLA North Carolina matchup?
Well, they're two teams that I like both. I mean, and I said that going into the tournament. You know, you played the negative juju effectively with North Carolina, and I said I thought they had a great chance to advance, and they made me look good there. And I told you UCLA, and they didn't look as good as I thought they might in advancing, but they're picking up momentum, so I think that's what they're doing. So, you know, I kind of rate that game a little bit like the Miami game, that you've got two teams kind of similar in a lot of respects, and you know, one's going to win and one ain't. I'd give the slight edge to North Carolina, the way they're kind of going and the horsepower they got, maybe in Philadelphia, sticking with my geographical bias of picks, you know, East Coast team versus the West Coast team. But I think that's going to be a dogfight. You know, which UNC team shows up might, you know, the first half UNC team does not lose to UCLA, but the second half team gets, you know, probably loses by double figures. Yeah. So
it's interesting because, you know, UCLA was able to really put the clamps on St. Mary's, and which isn't like a feat within itself. It's not like St. Mary's is an offensive juggernaut, but was impressed.
Except just interjecting quickly, you know, St. Mary's had just put up 85 in their first round game, you know, and was an offensive juggernaut in their dissection with the ball screen of, you know, whoever the heck they tore apart. Who did they tear apart in that first round? They tore someone apart. I didn't pick them either. I know I was Indiana. They tore them apart, and Indiana was a defensive team, right, going into that game. So, anyway,
You're right. I was surprised at how well they were able to put points on the board versus St. Mary. I think that what St. Mary's has been able to do is that even when their offense hasn't come to play, their defense always did, and so like. For them to get 72 hung on them, and people at home are probably saying 72, that's not a lot of points. Against St. Mary, that's a lot of points.
Yeah, you know what I thought watching it? And I don't know, because that's an in-state rivalry game. So that game, right, that game had its own dynamic going on where, you know, St. Mary's and their alums and everyone else, I mean, wants nothing more than to beat big, bad UCLA and vice versa. UCLA probably wants to, you know, put St. Mary's back in their place, go back to Moraga and, you know, and chant your Australian chants or something. But so I think there's a little rivalry there. But what I thought watching was, UCLA just had a couple of their better players were just better. You know, it looked like better players just going out and saying, look, we're better. And St. Mary's almost with no answer. But I think part of that, because it was a little bit more on the line and St. Mary's wasn't catching anyone by surprise and some of that. So that was a odd game, but it made me, you know, a lot of respect for UCLA and the way they disposed of them that handily. So,
yeah. Another team that has played really good defense through the first two rounds, Providence, and you know, defense travels. Defense travels all the time. Defense goes, you know, goes with you. I mean, you bring the defense, you've got a chance to play. And with all due respect to, you know, Providence and their fans and my boy Tom Nelson, who has quite a few of his guys, you know, who've played at Providence or that are playing at Providence right now. Shout out to AJ Reeves. They've had a draw that is a favorable draw as a four seed, you know, having a South Dakota State, whom I thought had a chance for the upset, and they played them tough.
I think you said more than a chance, but I'll let you back off that right now if you want.
No. I said that they were going to pull the upset.
Yep.
South Dakota State and Vermont were my 2-13 seeds that I had pulling the upset, but I had all four of the 13 seeds covering the spread.
Hey, so to your point, covered
the spread.
Okay. Hey, to your point about Providence too. I mean, look at Eddie Cooley said it in his post-game remarks, they were well aware that, a lot of money was on South Dakota State. And they were able and I think are carrying with them the role of underdog, almost like a higher seeded team might. I mean, Providence, a Big East team and a four seed is in some ways positioned as like a St. Peter's. That makes them dangerous because they are, they're not a blue blood and they're going to give you what they've got, like you said, starting with effort and defense and, just solid basketball on both ends. I mean, that's the way they're going to play. So,
and veteran basketball players.
Yeah, like, they are. Yeah,
we said last week, if not this team, then what team? Right. Yeah. So yeah. The answer is, it's this team.
I just the thing I would say is, man. And this again is partly my bias. I'm not sure of, selfishly, I hate the matchup. They got to go against Kansas. I, as a guy rooting for the Friars in this particular case, and a Kansas fan too. But boy, what a tough matchup for them. Like, and if they get it done, which I don't have them picked to do, and I'll have egg on my face when they do. I could see him beating a lot of teams in this tournament, and to have to go up against Kansas, that's going to be one for the ages if they're able to pull it off. Well, I'd like their chances against some of these other teams a lot more, is all I'm saying.
I think that because of the way the brackets have unfolded, if they're able to find a way to get by Kansas, it opens up for them to be in the championship game. The way everything is unfolded, it opens up for them a chance. But with that, they have to play the perfect game. They can't come out there and bring the B game and get it done versus Kansas. Not this Kansas team. Not the way this Kansas team is playing. Like, this Kansas team feels as if, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it feels as if they were just waiting for the tournament.
Yeah, I think they're hitting their stride. I do. Yeah. I think you're right.
You saw it coming in the Big 12 tournament, and you're like, man, they're playing different. They've got a different, giddy up on the hitch right now, and they're going to be tough to beat.
But I think you could say that about a couple teams that we haven't talked about too, which is, you could talk about Houston and talk about giddy up and hitting their stride in the tournament and flying under the radar. Houston is a five seed, maybe the team like Providence as a dangerous mid seed team that could easily, find themselves in a Final Four, but hitting their stride. Nova, you mentioned before we went on. I mean, Nova's starting to play like Nova. So again, they're a two seed, but they just seem to be doing what they do. One more time and making me and anyone else that didn't pick them, potentially look like, we don't guys that don't learn their lesson. So there's a few teams.
The interesting part about Houston is they play in the AAC, and the AAC doesn't get a lot of respect when it comes to, when it comes to seed, I mean, to bids in the tournament. I believe, aren't they they're the only team from the AAC in the draw this year? SMU got left out. I think that was surprising that SMU didn't get in. I thought they had a resume that said we should get in, but that comes from the AAC not getting the respect that that I believe they've kind of earned, because they seem to have a representative that makes a run every single year. And it's not the same team. You know, when Connecticut was there, Connecticut made some runs before they returned back to their, you know, to whatever. Connecticut was making those runs, and now you have Houston and SMU and UCF has been a representative before. Like, they have
But I don't think it's as much about the conference. I think it's about Kelvin Sampson and Houston, the city of Houston, trying to bring back the glory days of Phi Slamma Jamma. Kelvin Sampson, who I loved his post-game comments, in part, he said, you know, when he went to the NBA for that sabbatical, he went to learn offense and then brought the offense back to the college game. So, I mean, he's, you know, you always talk about players playing for a purpose. You know, I think Kelvin Sampson's coaching for a higher purpose too. So I think it's about Houston. And I was aware, but I didn't give him enough respect in my bracket. And I think they're playing lights out right now. So I've got Arizona to win it all in one of my two brackets that I have, but I'll tell you what, I'm, you know, a side of me would lay down some dollars on Houston, at least to cover, if not win the game outright, the way they're playing.
Well, the line's 1.5 right now, so that's a pick'em game. That's saying that the money says, you know, they think Houston's going to put up a good fight. I think it'll be an excellent game. And for my money, it's the game of the night for those Thursday matchups. Thursday is just a bunch of tasty matchups, but another really good one is the Michigan-Villanova matchup. You know, this Michigan team just knows how to – one of these years, by the way, Juwan Howard is going to get an opportunity to go into the tournament with a fully loaded team, which he hasn't been able to do so far. He keeps losing guys to some type of injury or whatever. Last game, it was one of their guards went out with a concussion or concussion-like symptoms. Last year, they had one of their guards who I think he tore his knee or something like that. And so he's been dealing with all of these things. I think no one's been better at making these adjustments with their team on the fly in these high-pressure moments than Juwan Howard over these last couple of years, having to kind of really redesign it on the fly to keep it moving in the right direction. And then obviously we know what Jay Wright does. He does Jay Wright things, and people keep trying to not put them in a Final Four, and they keep ending up in a Final Four. So what do you think about this matchup, Michigan versus Villanova?
Well, first thing I think is that Juwan Howard's probably going to raise a banner faster than Bama. So I think Juwan Howard, should he stay at Michigan, I say that they will raise a banner before my previous prediction that there would be a Bama banner for Bama and Nate Oates. Juwan Howard's going to get his first, I think. I'll tell you what, boy, I think it's going to be a hell of a game, and my heart says the blue and maize of Michigan, and my head says, hey, you damn idiot, you can't bet against Nova. So I'm not gonna bet against Nova. I think Juwan Howard it's an unbelievable story that they're still standing. And I thought that was it was interesting because what we talked about, I thought his consoling of the Tennessee young man that I guess played some AAU ball with his kid, I thought those two images keep sound bites maybe at, like, that keeps it all in perspective. Here's a guy that maybe the unsuspecting or unknowing public might demonize for being overly aggressive in one context, who in the next moment, in the next right, is consoling a guy in the same post-game line. I thought that wasn't lost on me at all. So, yeah, going to be a hell of a game. Actually rooting for, I guess, again, I'm rooting for Juwan Howard. Now, how would you not? But you know, can't bet against Jay Wright and Nova.
Yeah, I think for me, you stay away from this game if you're somebody right. like me. I'm rooting right. for I'm openly rooting for Juwan Howard. More than I'm rooting for Michigan.
Right.
I am like I wear number five. I wore number five growing up. And it was because of the Fab Five. You know, Jalen Rose was left-handed. I was left-handed. So the Fab Five is a part of my DNA. Like, it came along at that perfect time of where I really started wholesale investing in basketball as a player, as someone who loved the game. The Fab Five is a part of my, like, a part of who I am. It's my Americana. So I still think it's a travesty. I still think it's a shame that Juwan Howard's not a head coach in the NBA. But with that being said, him coming to Michigan and, you know, having to deal with all of the things that come with college that he probably wasn't ready for because he's been an NBA guy. He spent a billion years in the NBA. Then he spent more of them coaching. So he hasn't been in college in forever. But to see what he's doing and the connections that he's making, like to watch his wife, you know, and them cut to his wife and watch her reaction, to see his son down on, you know, on the team, and them, his mom and his wife and his son embracing afterwards, to see him hugging Chris Webber, to see him hugging Jalen Rose. I'm all in because it's Juwan Howard. But man, do I love me some. I've got a Jay Wright love affair that has
rivaled only. Yeah, rivaled only by your love affair with Staley, with Coach Staley at South Carolina. So
did you hear like some random rumor that at one point in time Kansas State men's team was thinking about hiring Dawn Staley?
I didn't, but as we talked about in previous episodes, you know, a move like that by some college or professional team is a home run.
Yeah, so it's a good transition because we could talk tournament all day, obviously.
Yeah, can I go one more though? We got to pay homage to Coach K's last ride before we move on.
Well, for sure. We got a couple more games to get through. I want to make sure we get really? Through those games. Oh, Arkansas Gonzaga to. Starts off the.
Oh.
Gonzaga haven't been. I haven't been that impressed with Gonzaga. The first round was the first round. Their previous matchup, round of 32 matchup with Memphis. I thought that was a game that Memphis had an opportunity to win. Maybe in some respect should have won. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think.
Same old for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're as good as the past Gonzaga team, but they have Superman, who occasionally goes into the phone booth and puts on his cape. And so if
who's Superman to you?
Well, for Gonzaga, clearly it's Drew Timmy. So if Timmy okay. can go into a phone booth at halftime and tell the boys, we're not going to play like some effing softies, ha, 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 and go out and deliver, you know, 25 and 12, whatever the heck he did in the second half, Drew Timmy put on his cape. But, you know, I think that only – they're going to have to play better if they want to cut down the net. So I have – you know, I like you, I – now that caught my attention. If Drew Timmy, you know, I mean, again, I don't know. That was a very impressive second. That second half performance was really impressive. But
yeah, he's your consummate collegiate, right?
Yeah, that's what I was telling my wife. That I said, hey, watching even in the first half, I said right there is why he's going to be Tyler Hansbrough. Like he'll make the NBA, but he's not going to do anything, right? But then the second half started, and I go, well, you know, Tyler Hansbrough, you know, didn't do that with the bright lights on, you know, quite to the same degree. And I'm no disrespect there, because you hear what I'm saying. So
no, for sure.
Again, he put on Superman's cape. That was as good an individual half as anyone I've seen.
My one takeaway from the Gonzaga game, and you can tell me what you think about this, because I've been struggling all year to figure out Chet Holmgren. Mm-hmm. Like, people keep saying he's this and he's that. So here is what I've come up with.
I saw your tweet. I'll tell you what you came up with.
Okay.
You came up with Mike Dunleavy, and the rest of it I can't recall. But when I almost tweeted you back, or
Mike Dunleavy with worse handles, right. Slower with worse right. handles.
So what I was gonna say back to you was, yeah, but you're forgetting the part about 3 inches.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah.
If you remember, Mike Dunleavy grew at Duke. He was a legit, like, 6'10 dude by the time he left Duke. He was just 105 pounds, like Chet Holmgren is.
Right.
Like, so here's the thing. Chet Holmgren was not, he's not a post player. Can we agree to that? He's not a post player, right?
Yeah. And we can agree that you don't need to be in today's NBA.
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. Right. So then who is he? Who is he getting his shot off on in the NBA?
Well, I think he's a guy. I think he's Jermaine O'Neal. I think he's Jermaine O'Neal.
Malice in the Palace, Jermaine O'Neal.
I think he's Jermaine in the sense that he's going to spend a good deal of time getting tutored, right? Because Jermaine O'Neal, didn't he get into the league at like 18, something like that, right? Okay. And then, you know, hey, Jermaine O'Neal, and 7 years later, he was an all-pro and an MF-er, okay? Mm-hmm. So I say that's Holmgren's chance is like he's going to go away for a while and he's going to reappear and we're going to go, oh, my God, I almost forgot about him. He's pretty damn good when the physicality piece and the rest of it catches up, you know. So
I mean, how many years
he could be a Dirk, a Nowitzki.
How many years did Dunleavy spend in the league? It was a good amount of time. He wasn't like just in and out.
Yeah, well, I still say that this guy Holmgren has at least 2 inches on Dunleavy, so I'm not buying that. And he's just longer. I like the comparison. I think it was great. You made me. But I think he's longer, and I think length wins in the NBA with athleticism.
Okay,
I think
his game is similar.
Yeah,
but I just don't think he's as athletic as Dunleavy was. Like right. Dunleavy was just legitimately more twitchy than Holmgren is. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's a product of he's still having to try to grow into that lanky, long body, but. But I don't see Kevin Durant. And
right.
And I feel like that's what people are trying to sell us. Like, this dude can be a Durant-like. And I'm like, he's not nearly as athletic as.
Well, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I agree with you there. Yeah, I agree.
The athleticism is where I'm really struggling.
Yeah.
And I don't know who he guards. I don't know who he's guarding in the NBA.
I agree with you on both points.
But Arkansas. So Arkansas comes in. They're not playing the greatest of ball. They probably should have lost to Vermont, if for no other reason than to make me prophetic. New Mexico State held them to 53 points. What's the chances that they can put some things together and stop Gonzaga? Because my contention is if Vermont is the Gonzaga of the Northeast, then now they have to play the real Gonzaga. They didn't look that great versus the faux Gonzaga. I think this is a bad matchup for Arkansas. What do you think?
I think it depends on what I agree with you, but I think it depends on what Gonzaga team shows up, you know. So Gonzaga team that shows up fully octaned, then that thing's over at halftime probably, and Arkansas goes home. But if Gonzaga goes home, you know, goes out and plays, you know, lethargically, then I think a lot of teams can beat them, including Arkansas.
I think the one thing helping Gonzaga and a lot of these teams is the time between the round of 32 and the Sweet 16 give coaches a chance to really get back in their bag.
Yeah, I think that's what's so great about the tournament too, because that's the way, right? I think most of the coaches look at each round as its separate tournament. So each weekend is its own tournament. You try to win that tournament, and then you go on to the own tournament. And like we know, going from one, you know, things change in that time, to your point.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why it's fun. I mean, we're sitting here saying, okay, this, but, you know, for all we know, some switch flips this week, St. Peter's goes home, and, you know, that's part of the deal, right? Can they keep that mo going and all the energy, and or do they get full of themselves because everyone's kissing their behinds while they're, you know, possibly in school and doing this and doing that? And so, you know, how do these teams change in the 3, 4, 5 days between weekends? So
yeah, I mean, and that's going to be really interesting for the modern day coaching GOAT, Coach K, as he continues his last ride. He made it through the first weekend, and he draws Texas Tech, another Big 12 team who's used to going through the meat grinder, struggled to get past Notre Dame, but got it done. You know, Duke handled Michigan State. Thought they looked impressive doing it. Michigan State put up a fight, but just didn't have enough bullets in the gun. Coach K is still dancing. Is this a situation where things have kind of opened up, where we could see a Duke in a Final Four? If not, like, make a run at a title, or is this a situation where they have a legitimate opportunity to get clipped by a Texas Tech team that's kind of Jekyll and Hyde? Like, one game they're really, really good, the next game they're struggling.
I think the answer is both, and I think you can make a case for both too. So on one hand,
way to ride the fence right there. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, they look both. And so I'm looking at them going, gosh, you know, and I have them advancing a little further in one bracket and not another. So I think, if they play the way it looks like, I saw, maybe it was Billis, but somebody, you know, it looked like they matured before our eyes in the last 5 minutes of that a Michigan State game, down 5. And so I texted another basketball friend of mine, I don't believe it was you, and I said, why don't they guard like this all the time? I mean, me, that's what jumped through my TV set, is they locked Michigan State down in that 4 minute mark, down 70-65, and they were going home. And Krzyzewski's own words, right, are, he goes, I'm an Army guy, but our ship was sinking. So that was the last hurrah, and all of a sudden they just D'd it up and then turned it into offense. And I'm like, okay, well, if they play like that, now that's a different team. And I don't watch every game, but just knowing what I know, they haven't played like that all year. And that's why people that have watched them more than me said, guess what? They grew up right before our eyes. So that Duke team can beat anyone, no question. They got all the pieces and the coach. And the public, okay, and the refs probably, and the NCAA, and, you know, Nike, and anybody else. So they've got everyone on their side. But the other flip side of it is, did they are they, you know, did they win an emotional game in the matchup everyone wanted to see, Izzo and Kay? This is a trap game for them. See, this Texas Tech game is a trap game potentially, and Texas Tech with Mark Adams is a defensive juggernaut. They, you know, from the great state of Texas are going to like nothing more than sending Duke home crying in their towel. So, and they're every bit capable of doing that. In fact, one of my brackets, I've got Texas Tech beating Duke. Now, again, right now, you ask me, I'm going to tell you Duke's going to beat them. I'm going to say that they grew up, but right? Coaching 101, every game's a new game. So, I mean, we're just, you know, you can't make too much of the last game. On to the next one. And it's so hard to forecast because you don't know what team's going to show up. So I'll give the edge to Duke, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to watch for signs early on. Are they playing like the Duke team that was down 5 to Michigan State? Or are they playing like a Duke team that will allow anyone to play with them? And like Gonzaga that we were talking about earlier, sooner or later, when you let people play with you that shouldn't be able to play with you, guess what? You lose and you go home.
I mean, I couldn't say it better myself. I think that they have to – I really get frustrated by these teams with all of this supposed talent that go out there and just don't have the arrogance to say, no, I'm better than you, so I'm just going to crush you. Like, I'm better, so I'm going to crush you. Like, I don't understand this whole these guys don't play like they're 5-star and 4-star guys, like, not all the time. And I don't understand it, because the moment I know that I'm better than you and I'm nowhere near a 5-star, I was a no star, maybe, who knows? Like, but the moment I thought that I don't even have to know for certain. The moment I thought that I was better than you, it could be a lie. The moment I thought I was better than you, my entire mission was to crush your life. So, like, to watch these guys that are supposedly top 5 picks in the NBA not play as if they are top 5 picks in the NBA is extremely frustrating. Like, extremely frustrating, especially when you play for that coach. Like, that coach who everybody says it gets the best out of everyone or the best out of their players. And, like if that coach can't get you to do that on the regular, like, you didn't text me and ask me why don't they guard like this all the time. But if you would have, I would have had a really simple question, and it would have been filled with a couple expletives. Because I just don't – we talk about it a lot, and that's kind of like the older way of talk. They're just not built the same. And so maybe there's a switch that gets flipped, or maybe they were inspired by the fact that they were going to be embarrassed. Whatever it might have been, I don't know, but – if you don't come out and do that to Arkansas, to a team that's sitting here ready to be beat, then I don't know like why you should be where you are in this world. Like, it's okay to lose, because sometimes another team it's just their night. And it's almost like there's nothing you can do about it. But it shouldn't be one of those things where you look at it and go, man, Duke didn't really put any effort forth. Like, if that ends up being the case, I'd be really disappointed.
Yeah, and I thought Painter for Purdue kind of in a different way hit on what you were talking about. And I just saw a brief clip of it, but he talked about players having to get over themselves. So I don't know what the context is. I know it's still there on ESPN or somewhere, but, you know, players got to get over themselves. And he said, in reference to high school guys, but for these guys that are freshmen that you're talking about, I mean, that's part of the deal. Like, they got to get over themselves and get to a more mature athletic personality commensurate with the level that they're playing at, because they're just, you know, they're still playing in what I would sometimes call a high school mode, if you will. So that is frustrating to watch anytime someone's blatantly underperforming.
You talk about coaches, and I wanted to get an opportunity to talk about the coaching hiring, because we've seen a lot of hirings going on, a lot of firings, a lot of hirings going on, and just wanted to get your thought about it. We're going to rapid fire. We'll go down. Louisville hires Kenny Payne. Kenny Payne, an alum of Louisville, if I'm not mistaken. What do you think of that hire?
With ties, I mean, I don't know a ton about him myself, but everything I've read and is it's a great hire. You know, hiring one of their own with NBA pedigree, a little bit like the Juwan Howard hire at Michigan. So can Kenny Payne, you know, do for Louisville under the cloud of hate, you know, cloud of suspicion that Louisville has been under for a couple of years now. So good hire.
Florida hired San Francisco coach Todd Golden.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Smith, a protege of Kyle Smith, a friend of mine at Washington State. So, you know, certainly deserves credit for doing what he's doing. But I put this right into the youngin' basket that I've talked about before. So Florida went, you know, I think they look at Todd Golden as the next Billy Donovan, Wonder Boy.
Yeah, I think this is the worst hire of all the hires.
Right. And then the question I would have for you, I mean, you're free to have your, you know, is why do you think that, you know, like
they just had a Golden. The guy who just
Mike
left.
Mike White.
Yep.
Mike White.
They just had a Golden.
Yep.
And that was underwhelming. And so now you bring in essentially the same guy that you just saw walk out the door for Georgia, because he was getting out a little bit ahead of the mob, but they were coming for his head eventually. Trust me, they were not happy at what was going on in Florida basketball. And you go in and you hire the same type of guy.
Right. And the difference from what I understand, and I'm not saying anything against Mike White, because I know Dusty May was an assistant, now head coach of his own right, work for him. But Todd Golden supposedly is like an analytics whiz. I know that from like an analytic whiz. So he had to blow him away with not only what he was able to do with San Francisco, but the way he, you know, sees the game, approaches the game. So it's kind of like these baseball people these days, you know, and, you know, different folks doing the hiring are going to be impressed and want to go certain ways. So, you know, it probably gets into the nuances of each candidate. So I'm just telling you, that's what this guy's bringing to the table, is a modern analytical something, something on top of, you know, whatever other skills he's got. Next. Well,
that's great. And one of the star recruits from Florida is already decommitted.
There we go.
Already. Nah, I'm good. I'll see y'all later. We go. Go back to that San Francisco shit over there. We're good.
All right.
Xavier hires Sean Miller.
Yeah, one of the more interesting hires. So, Toto, this ain't Kansas anymore. You know, like, boy, can you go home? You know, this is all the Wizard of Oz stuff with maybe that was all just a freaking big tornado that, Sean just encountered at Arizona. So he gets to go home and put Xavier back in their rightful place. So I like the hire. I think there's some people that are, you know, obviously going to question college basketball because of the scandal that he was a part of, as well as so many of the other universities, not all of which are resolved yet. And so, you know, as soon as they could, you know, right, a university's put another guy back in charge. But I'm a Sean Miller fan, and I know he's a hell of a coach. And so that's a good hire for Xavier. They know, hey, at least they know what they're getting. You can't say, like you're saying with Florida, you're suggesting Florida doesn't know what they're getting. Or in the case of Xavier, they know exactly what they're getting.
Well, and what they're getting is a damn good basketball coach. Like for all the other stuff. And I fall a little bit different on all of the sanctions and the blah, blah, blahs, because all of it has to do with paying kids.
Right.
That probably should be getting money anyway, at least in my opinion.
Right.
So
right.
I could care less. Like, that stuff doesn't. Now, if he was cheating in some type of way, like cheating the game itself,
right,
I'd have a different opinion of it. But, you know, if it's just, hey, these guys got some bread, I don't care.
Yep.
What I do know is when the game's going on, he's a hell of a basketball coach. And so, like, if you get a chance to bring a basketball coach back in, you do it.
And so, he's probably a better coach, like any good coach, in practice. And I have seen him, his practices live, whether it's at the U of A. So, you know, he's the real deal. No question about it. I'll tell you a great hire that you haven't brought up yet is right here in the great state of Maine. I always tell you what a hell of a state we got for basketball. But bringing back Chris Markwood, who was a phenomenal player for them in the early 2000s and now has been as an assistant, then stayed on staff there, then went to Vermont as part of Vermont's huge run, and most recently was at Boston College. So Chris Markwood to UMaine, I was telling you this before we went on air, that's probably in its own hemisphere the biggest splash of all of this.
Is this his first
head coaching gig? Yeah.
So he's going to be shout out to
Chris Markwood. I'll send him this little clip anyway of us.
Absolutely. Tell Chris Markwood I've got some kids. We've got some kids down here. He should probably come down to Georgia and steal some of these kids down here.
I will let him know. There's a lot of people excited in Maine for that hire for a lot of reasons, and I'm one of those people. So who else you got? Anyone?
Congratulations to him. I know that, you know, that's always a good thing to be able to take over, you know, your alma mater and get to do it where that seems to be kind of where Maine's going right now. Obviously, with, you know, the head coach hiring of Jordan Stevens.
Right.
You know, bringing back a UMaine alum, and now you have a UMaine alum in the basketball. Your two biggest programs in the school being run by alumni. That has to feel good. That has to draw a lot of interest in, for sure.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think they're trying to, you know, they've got to infuse some big time energy into the whole athletic department and all the wheels that go with it. So they're hoping those two guys do it. And I think they've got two good ones to do it.
You seem to be a little bit up on this one. Mississippi State hiring New Mexico coach Chris Jans.
Yeah, I just think he's an under the radar guy that not a lot of people know. I just met him because when he was a upstart assistant, you know, doing the assistant thing in these different places, doing the dirty work for all these guys. You know, he just struck me then as you know, he knows what he's doing. And then so I've always kind of kept one eye out for where he's been and what he's done. And you look at what he's done and it's nothing but good. So I just think he's one of these guys. He's not the sexiest hire. He'd probably make your all Matt Painter, not the best looking guy team.
Oh, no, he's definitely nice on that squad. He is definitely on that team.
But I'll tell you what, I still see the guy from about 15 or more years ago when I first met him. And he's going to end up being a sneaky good hire for them. So that's what I think there. He's going to do well.
Jerome Tang gets to take over Kansas State on the Baylor assistant.
Yeah, I don't know as much about Jerome. I've only, you know, I know what I've read and all of that. So I'm not the person to – I don't have any personal commentary on it. I just say, look at, right now, anyone off of Baylor's staff is probably a viable candidate anywhere, just like anyone off of Villanova's staff or anyone off of Bill Belichick's staff, right? So the question when you're one of the many assistants for some of these guys is – you know, do you possess your own goods or are you just part of the tree that's going to go off and not be able to duplicate the success of your mentor? So I have no dog in this fight.
I do like the fact that Kansas State, gave Tang the job because he's one of the only coaching hires that was a black man. Him and Payne, I believe, are the only two black men that were hired in these.
Well, don't forget about Grace State of Maine. Chris Marshall.
Grace State of Maine. And because I want to get down to it, I know we're running down on time.
Yeah.
Kevin Willard from Seton Hall to Maryland. I go, okay.
Yeah.
And feel free to jump in if you think something different.
Well, yeah. I think that's a good hire because he, you know, what he's done just jumping from Iona to Seton Hall, right? And you know, boom, boom, boom. Now goes to Maryland. So he, you know, Ralph Willard is dad. The apple don't fall far from the tree. I mean, you can call it. But he's a good coach, and I think Shaheen Holloway is going to be the next coach of Seton Hall. And so we've already talked about what he's going to bring there. You know what? I didn't say it, but what I like about Shaheen is I mean, his personality and character just jumps right through the TV. And I've listened to some pods of him too. Like he doesn't have an ounce of phony in him. And I think sometimes so many of these guys and not, you know, whatever, there's some people that are real and then there's some people that are less real. Cause that job is sometimes smoke and mirrors, like a lot of jobs. So I just think, you know, what you see is what you get with Shaheen Holloway. So Seton Hall would do well to hire. I would suspect they're going to hire one of their own. It's going to be hard not to, because if they don't, someone else is going to, and then they're going to look like idiots for not hiring him when he goes off and, you know, leads another program.
So it's funny because I actually thought LSU should have hired Shaheen Holloway. I think I'm trying to understand like because I've seen these coaches who get to make these jumps from these smaller schools to these bigger time programs. Like, why not? I don't see that much from guys who look like me. It's really frustrating because, and it's not that I don't like Matt McMahon as a hire, although I think that they just fired Matt McMahon.
Right.
And that's my problem with the hire. Like, you just fired that guy. Now, granted, you fired him because of, you know, violations or whatever it might be, but at the same time, the product that he put on the court was one that never led up to the reason that you hired him in the first place. So now you want McMahon to come in and do what Wade wasn't able to do. It just seems like a similar hire. It just wasn't sexy to me. I thought, it's LSU, let's get some sexy picks in here. The one that I'm really, really torn on, South Carolina. And here's why. I 100% believe that South Carolina should have hired Dawn Staley. Mm. They should have made a run at her and said, hey, State, we're family. We need you to come over here and do the damn thing. They should have hired her. I think she has a perfect mentality to be able to coach men. I think that wouldn't be a far stretch for anyone for her to have credibility, because similar to Becky Hammond, Dawn Staley was a legitimate killer on the basketball court. So like, you're not just talking about somebody that did this thing in theory. She was that work. And I say that understanding that Chattanooga, Lamont Parrish from Chattanooga, getting this opportunity to coach at South Carolina is a great opportunity for Lamont Parrish. And so I'm not mad at the hire of Lamont Parrish, but I believe that the right hire would have been Dawn Staley. And not just because she's a woman and it would have been groundbreaking and, you know, whatever, but just because I believe in her as a coach. And I think that she would have done a fantastic job understanding the climate of South Carolina.
Well, amen to that. And again, I'm some institution, whether it's major college or professional, is going to get wise to the idea that it's time. Just like our country is going to get wise to the idea that it's time, and there'll be a woman in charge here sooner or later. And to your point about frustrations in hiring, I mean, you have every reason to be frustrated and, you know, as, you know, as these things go. So to that, we'll see. And, you know, hopefully the future is brighter.
Yeah. And congratulations to all those coaches. I mean, they've all worked hard. So this isn't me saying you don't deserve it. You know, all of these coaches have worked hard. They've done what they've needed to do. They've had success where they were. So they get an opportunity to continue to advance. But, you know, I'd like to see more. I like to see more hires that don't look like the same old hires. I am, by the way, I know you were talking about the youngins, but, you know, 55-year-old Kenny Payne, that's a guy who's not the young, you know, the young gunner getting an opportunity to be the head guy at Louisville.
I might add my guy Hubert, in the Sweet 16 with the Tar Heels ain't no youngin' either. So hey, a little props for the veterans.
Do we give Hubert Davis props for the coaching job?
Hugely.
Yeah.
Huge props. Yes. In this day and age where it's all about the chip and it's all about the dub. What are you?
So it's all about the dub.
And we know it's about how it looks. And it's how about how you finish, not how you start. Oh, hey, he's going to look like a freaking genius if they keep right on rolling.
Listen, it's wide open now. They've got a chance now.
No,
they've got a chance now. UCLA's defense is probably the toughest defense that's left in their way.
You know, it's interesting. I know who a lot of people have in their brackets, and I know who I got. But I'll tell you what, you could make a case that Carolina, Houston, Miami, and Providence would be a hell of a Final Four. And I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't even know if that's possible. But those, you know, like those aren't teams that everyone has. Not most people have those team picked, but every one of them is catching lightning in a bottle right now. Yeah. So Hubert Davis, keep it rolling, baby.
Yes, Hubert Davis, keep it rolling, please. Please keep it rolling, Hubert Davis, because I would like our Tar Heels to win. And Hubert Davis, proud alum of Chapel Hill. He's forgotten way more basketball than I probably know. And he's a great player, and he is an emerging coach. He's learning on the job, and they're in the Sweet 16 learning. You can't ask for anything better than that. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to be our time. Zebra Stripes Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens. That's Coach Whit LeJour. If you don't already have two monitors set up for Thursday, you better do it now, because you're not going to want to miss a game. And these games are stacking by on twos on 20 minutes apart. So you're going to have to watch. You're going to have one TV set up and the picture-in-picture if you have that. Well, you're going to need to have a TV and a computer set up to make sure that you get all of this action. But we will be watching. And
hey,
Coach Whit will be awake for the end of those nine-something games that start.
And I have. That's why I started out saying I was tired, you know, because I – and Mary Beth, my better half, has been right there with me. I mean, she knows –
ride or die. He's a ride or die for a reason.
Yeah, but hey, here's the way I go. I just watch a half, you know. I just watch the better game, or they stag, you know, they whatever they do, right? They stagger them. So right, I'll catch the second half of games and this and that, or I'm flipping during timeouts and all that sort of stuff. So I don't go the multi TV myself. I watch the score of the game. I watch, you know, and then I'll just use my DVR to record any of the games I want to see if I happen to miss some or one or something like that. So that's my – because I think I'd get dizzy if I was flipping around too many – if I was looking at too many screens. So,
anyway. Yeah, it makes sense. I usually just like to have one playing as the main one, but I want to be able to just peek over at the other one. So like not really putting full eyes on each one at a time, but at least that 20 minutes gives you a chance to have one finish and then you can pop in on the other one at the tail end of it. So they at least have it where you don't have to like stagger and watch both endings at the same time. So that's a good thing. Definitely, however you do it, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you're doing it. We are thick in the tournament. Shout out to the ladies tournament. We would love to have gone over that, but we only have an hour. So we're already over it. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, everywhere else. We really do appreciate it. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Gene Clemons on any social media platform. You can follow Coach Witt. Coach Witt, what's your handle?
Breaker19. Breaker19. This year the Duck. Is that my handle? I just went back when I had a CB radio. I think that's my handle. I'm the Duck.
Your Twitter handle.
Oh,
we're talking about here.
Sorry.
It's okay. You can follow him at Witt Lejeur. You can follow me at Gene Clemons. You can follow me on any social media platform at Gene Clemons. You can follow him at Witt Lejeur. Hey, leave us a comment. Tell us what you think. What is the team that you believe has the best opportunity to make the deepest run? Is it Miami or is it Iowa State? We want to hear from you. So leave us some comments. We'd love to hear it. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, y'all stay blessed.